original bricks there. If you want to just touch, feel, and see what we are talking about before the meeting, so that we should all understand what we are talking about, is displayed on the table for all of us to see and touch. Honourable members, good morning and welcome to the meeting. I hope all of us, we had a very good rest and we are ready for today and for this quarter. Department of Public Works, welcome. IDT, welcome. AGRIMA, everybody, visitors, you're all welcome. Without any waste of time, I would like to request the Department of Public Works to make their presentation. And if there are any additions, I'll ask the department or those who are responsible for the project or for the section to make additions. Yeah, welcome. And Minister, Deputy Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much, sir. Good morning, Chairperson. The presentation, as I understand, there are two presentations this morning on the same topic, basically, on the school bill program. And the first presentation from DPW will be given by Mfazeko, DDG Mfazeko. So I think over to you.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Deputy Minister and Honourable Members. Firstly, I'd like to deliver apology from the Director General. He has fallen ill. That's why he couldn't make it to lead the delegation. The delegation from Public Works is Ms. Beakley and Mr. McNutt and also Mr. Mbele. I'm going to request the other members from the other our entities to introduce themselves before we start.
Morning, Honourable Members. I represent the IDT. My name is Ayanda Wakaba. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Deputy Minister. Good morning, Honourable Members of Parliament. My name is Joe Odhiambo from AGRIMA South Africa.
Morning. Morning to everyone. I'm Lennox Makwedini. I'm with AGRIMA South Africa.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, DM. Honourable Members, I'm Kukuma Zibuko from the CBE.
Good morning, Mpoma Shawa, PLO, Public Works.
Chair, we've been asked to come and make a presentation on the school build program and its relationship to SIP 13 and how we are assisting or how we're involved in the program with the Department of Basic Education. Our presentation is going to be outlined as per the contents to deal with the background, governance, roles and responsibilities, the agreement between basic education and public works, our proposed interventions, our proposed framework, IDT capacity, IDT service delivery model, the cost of ACM, alternative construction methodologies or systems versus the conventional bricks and mortar, and also our proposed generic delivery cycle that we are proposing in terms of how we can assist in this program. By way of background, without reading bullet by bullet, in essence is we know that the country has a backlog when it comes to appropriate facilities and assets for the purposes of for schooling, these being in the form of mud schools, these also being in the form of school infrastructure that exists but is not complete or adequate to complete the process of comprehensive and complete education that would require revamping of this particular school so that they've got all the facilities required so that they can achieve the objectives of education. The Department of Basic Education has engaged the Department of Public Works to collaborate in the building of school infrastructure in the Eastern Cape, and schools beautification programs through the Accelerated Infrastructure Delivery Initiative that is known in short as ACIDI. A draft MOA between the two departments has been developed and is currently undergoing final consultation before the two accounting officers of the various departments can sign off on it. With respect to governance roles and responsibilities, it is envisaged that DPW will be responsible for the management of the allotted schools to ensure the following three items: the delivery quality of delivery of projects in a quality manner that meet quality criteria, to be delivered on time and within budget, and that the program funds are utilized for the purpose that they were intended. It is also intended that IDT and Kuga Development Corporation will be engaged as implementing agents for the two programs. In dealing with the proposed agreement between Basic Education and Public Works, the two programs as outlined in the slide are dealing with school building program and the school beautification program. Under the school building program, there are 64 schools identified by Basic Education for upgrade. Of these, 30 have already been allotted directly to IDT by Department of Basic Education. When my colleague from the IDT makes his presentation, he will take you through the detail of that direct appointment. The remaining 34 have been allocated to Public Works. Public Works is currently undertaking a high-level desktop analysis of the 34 allocated schools based on the agreed criteria with Basic Education to determine the exact numbers of schools to be upgraded. Under the second leg of the program, that is school beautification program, there are 900 schools to be beautified in total across all the nine provinces. The priority that has been given to date has earmarked two areas for commencement of the project, those being the municipal districts of Vembe and also Waterberg, in those quantities that have been outlined of 19 and 4 respectively. What is the proposed intervention from Public Works in terms of the delivery model? We seek to reduce consultants' costs. We seek to improve operational efficiency. We seek to introduce standardization in design. That will also have an output that we seek to achieve to provisional bills of quantities. I will go into detail in the following slides with respect to these particular outputs that we intend to deliver with our proposed intervention and delivery model and why we think these are important. The proposed framework for the building program. Honorable members and chair, you would note that Public Works has adopted a portfolio management approach when it comes to dealing with its clients. This is one of the same that we're putting forward to Department of Basic Education in terms of to assist them to deliver on this particular program, that we are proposing a dedicated back office to assist them with respect to asset management, professional services, and property management and program management functions. And you will see how we are also proposing in terms of the first column on your far left where we foresee the role of Public Works and where we are seeing the role of IDT as a program manager who has extensive experience in this regard and has better efficiencies than we have. The proposed framework to start to deliver on those specific outputs that I've alluded to in slide number 7, and these are to meet the requirements for operational efficiency. This is to cover design, documentation, and construction phases. I will quickly just read what we are saying and give a detailed explanation of why this is important. We are saying that there needs to be an agreement on standard designs, and we are proposing not more than four per portfolio segment on modular principles to suit education services and operational requirements. And we're saying these can be delivered within a 2 month period. And secondly, we are saying that the production of provisional bills of quantities, also known as BOQs, on standard designs for education can also be delivered within 4 months. Why is this important? This is important in the context that on average, for each rand that we spend on infrastructure, we on average spend 18.5% on professional fees. That will mean 18 cents or 19 cents per rand that we spend goes to consultant fees rather than going to the mortar and the bricks or alternative materials in the actual structure itself. We are of the view that this can actually be brought down significantly by saying we need to have a principal agreement that for any school to fulfill its functional requirements, there has to be some standard principles around its design that are standard. Therefore, if we accept that for it to deliver its functional requirements, why then should we, each time we need to go and build a school, we need to go to redesign these schools over and over and over again? We should have some standard designs that have a shelf life that can be predetermined either of 5 to 10 years, so that is done once off and revised at adequate time intervals. That will shave off a significant amount of costs of that 18.5%, which effectively would mean that you are spending more of your rand in actual construction of the schools, and that means there's more rand available to deliver more schools in the long run. The actual quantification of how much that saving will deliver with respect to 18.5% will be a function of the quantum of schools you are building, because economies of scale will start to kick in, and also the use of the actual professional services providers that you'll no longer be needing to engage. This is understood also in the context that every facility is built on a piece of property that is different. Therefore, there are certain design elements that you can never escape that you will need to design for each school. That has to do with the topography of a particular area or the site on which a school will have to be built. So those particular costs we cannot escape, but we believe we can lock in the cost once off for a defined period of time on a modular basis so that we know what our schools should look like to deliver on the outcomes that are expected from the education system. We also take it further to say, then you can also have a much more better controlled cost system where you do a rigorous upfront quantification or cost estimation or cost engineering of the cost of these schools upfront, so you do not get surprises. And this could be done in over a period of 4 months. And you lock this and you do standard inflation adjustments that are consumerate with the changes in the economy in as far as the PPI is concerned, because this is within the material area where inflation will normally kick in. Why IDT? In dealing with the IDT capacity as a program manager, we want to identify. In principle, we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We've got an entity that has proven its capability to do program management. And if you look at their numbers of how they've done program management, they've done it better as an implementing agent than Public Works. And we're saying they've also been involved in this space, so they've gone through the learning curve. Let's not repeat the learning curve where they've already mastered it. They've got a national presence in each of the 9 provinces. They've got a core team of program management staff that is supplemented by professional teams that come from the private sector. They've proven competent program management skills, reinforced by a robust development administration competencies, and that has been demonstrated and verified by their sound financial management systems through their unqualified audits, demonstrated the robust management systems and tools that aid program implementation and enhance outcomes, achievements in reporting, which include in terms of what they have, which Public Works has still to develop into that particular space, an electronic-based beneficiary information system, which they know in short as BIMS, electronic program management system, and a world-class project planning and management methodologies. And I think, honorable members and chair, this has to also be taken in the context that Public Works is going through a turnaround. We need some space to rebuild the systems of Public Works, the organization itself. So when new demands come on board, we need to be cognizant of that particular change. And if we have an entity like the IDT that reports to the Ministry of Public Works, then it is only logical that if they already have a track record in the space that has been satisfactory, that we actually use them as a tool so that we do not under-deliver on this critical program. They also have ability and experience in the appointment of professionals and contractors timeously in order to complete the infrastructure projects on time. They also have the ability and the experience to undertake social facilitation in each of the areas where projects are to be undertaken. Now, this is an element that is a competitive advantage that the IDT brings to the fore. There is no social facilitation that gets done in how the public sector in general delivers a social infrastructure. IDT does this as part of the delivery model, and we think for the acceptance by communities of the social infrastructure that is important to the social fabric and the social capital, that we need this particular element so that the communities own these schools. They are part and parcel of the development of those communities. So they bring that particular competitive advantage that we do not have, and we think it's very highly appropriate for the social infrastructure. The IDT also has its own in-house legal service unit that serves its clients by providing them with full suits of legal assistance and advisory services on various areas of expertise. And I think this will also provide a lifting point of pressure from our department as we go through the turnaround. This is a schematic presentation of how we have viewed the role of public works in the current delivery model that IDT has. And this is not necessarily final. This is part of the agreement to be finalized with education. But I think what is important to highlight outside of the schematic presentation of that particular relationship is that the budgets will not reflect on public works, and they do not have to reflect on public works. We can work on the basis of recoverable basis, which we do for certain clients, like defense, where we implement projects on their behalf on a recoverable basis, where we demonstrate that we've delivered up to a particular stage of a project, and then we get paid and transfers are affected effectively. Honorable members, I want to apologize. The IT specialists are advised they do not know what the reason is why on the screen slide 13 is showing up the way it is. So I'm requesting your indulgence and permission to refer you to slide 13 on your packs, where we are dealing with the cost advantages with respect to alternative construction methodologies or building systems versus the conventional bricks and mortar. Can I just confirm through you, Chair, that everybody has got that particular slide in front of them? Honourable members, you will see we've got a sample there of schools that have been delivered using alternative construction methodologies or building systems, and we are depicting here more succinctly from a cost perspective to say if you look at the cost parameter, because if you evaluate construction projects, when you look at utility, you look at issues of time, cost and quality. On this variable of cost, alternative construction methodologies are proving that they are more cost efficient, up to a rate of being more affordable by close to a third, close to 33%. If you go to the highlighted red rows on the bottom, you can start to see the differences between those. In terms of average cost per school using alternative cost methodology methods, every school's cost are around 9 million, but if you look at the average cost when it comes to bricks and mortar, they range around 14 million. If you dissect that further in terms of cost per square meter, you can start to see also that differential there. For alternative construction methodologies, it's 4,000 rands per square meter, and when you look in terms of bricks and mortar, it's 7,000, and average cost per classroom in terms of alternative construction methodologies is 692 versus a million in terms of bricks and mortar. Now, we are proposing that this is a much more efficient, cost-efficient and effective way to deliver schools if you use that parameter of particular costs. And I don't want maybe to go into too much detail with the aspects in terms of how that enables any accounting officer, both the accounting officer of basic education and public works, to observe section 38 of the PFMA that calls for the effective and efficient use of public funds. The next slide that is dealing with a generic delivery cycle, this is the detail that we are proposing, that we have also tabled to the Department of Basic Education and also tabled to the Secretariat of the PICC in terms of how Public Works views the delivery cycle once agreement is reached with respect of how we can deliver the schools. I will not go into detail, and maybe I will take questions if there are particular questions with respect to how we can deliver. In essence, what we are saying is that it is possible within a window period of 18 months to deliver a school. Chair, with your permission, I would like to wrap up my presentation and request my colleague from IDT to present his presentation.
Thank you very much, Fesako.
Okaba.
Honorable members, thank you for the opportunity. As you know, we are part of the Public Works family, and what we do is encompassed within the broader role of the Department of Public Works. We work largely in social infrastructure delivery, and today we will talk largely on our role in schools infrastructure delivery. We will talk briefly about our history. We will not spend much time on the delivery model, schools infrastructure over the last 5 years, current IDT schools infrastructure programs, participation in CIP13 and ACM, and then conclude. This presentation complements the one done by my colleague. From a historical point of view, we had an opportunity of undertaking a pilot on behalf of the Department of Public Works, I think in the from 2010, actually in the 2010-11 financial year, which piloted the schools that my colleague presented on alternative construction methods. That enabled us to learn and to gather lessons that are currently being shared with the public sector in relation to this. We've participated in the National Eradication of Mud Schools program, I think the old program, members would remember it, the 2.7 billion program, which preceded the ACID program, which was a grant by National Treasury to provinces. We supported a number of provinces there. We invested about 150 million from 2008 as the IDT in the schools program. And we are participating in various provincial schools build program, I think since 2000. The relevance of this slide, my colleague has touched upon it, is just to bring in a clarity on the role that IDT plays. Often the question is asked, if you have the IDT, why use consultants in addition to the IDT? And I think it's important that we clarify that. IDT is a program management agency. In other words, if government has 5 billion of worth of schools to be managed, there are activities involved in program management, including the planning for that delivery, the procurement of the relevant service providers, the management of the relevant service providers in order to ensure the quality and the delivery of products, the issues of empowerment from a job creation, from a social community empowerment point of view, the issues of BBBE spend, youth, all of those issues are part of program management. At a project level, the IDT would engage service providers would undertake specific activities. I think that's the relevant of this slide. IDT's expenditure in the last 5 years in schools infrastructure is 7.5 billion with the break indicated there in terms of the program. I think all that this indicates is that the bulk of the work that IDT does on an annual basis is largely schools infrastructure based. At least 50% of our program annually is constituted of schools. Important to note here, which has been a matter raised by the committee before, is that we do not decide where we work. we offer our services to the various provincial departments. So depending on the capacity of the province, depending on the budgets allocated to that province, the backlogs in that specific province, the IDT's work will be determined in engagement with those provinces. So we might do more in one province than we do in the other province, not necessarily out of our own decision. In the 2012-13 financial year, we did 12 schools. I think we've provided a list attached in terms of those schools. The committee has made indications before that it requires tangible information that tells us what is the name of the school, in what district the school is. That information has been provided there. There's a small error though. The number remains 12, but there's a small error in the numbers. I think there's about 4 in Eastern Cape and 5 in KwaZulu-Natal, but the list are there. I trust that the list, I think the lists are being circulated. I'm sure that the committee will find those useful. From a work opportunities point of view, we created 8,000 opportunities specifically in the 2012-13 financial year in the Schools Build program. We've created more job opportunities than these when one takes into account the entire IDT program delivery. But for schools program in particular, these are the work opportunities we created. I think this information provides an indicator in terms of IDT's contribution to empowerment. In the 2012-13 financial year, we spent over 1.7 billion, or rather we awarded over 1.7 billion to women contractors, which converts into 31% of the program delivery spend for 2012-13. We spent 667 million on youth service providers, which was 11% of our delivery, and we spent 3.68 billion on triple BEE qualifying service providers, which was 65% of our total program spend. We also created a total of 34,000 work opportunities on the entire social infrastructure. I indicated earlier on that about 8,000 of that was specifically in the schools program. The current IDT, current as in 2013-14, the current financial year, IDT schools program amounts to 4.7 billion. And involves close to 1,000 projects. You will see there, there's 967 projects there. There's an indication of how many projects are where. This total schools infrastructure program combines both that which we do for the National Department of Education, DBE, Basic Education, as well as the provincial departments of education. The greater part of it is upgrades and renovations in schools, with some few schools being replacement of mud and inappropriate schools. I think members would note that in many areas in South Africa, the need is not for a new school, but the need is for the infrastructure to be upgraded to the required level. So generally speaking, the involvement or the initiatives in the school's infrastructure are largely of an upgrade nature. So these are projects including both new replacements and upgrade schools. Also note that a significant number of them relates to the water and sanitation infrastructure in schools, which is part of the accelerated schools infrastructure delivery initiative driven by DBE. The new schools in particular, of that 1,000 projects, about 50 schools. When I say new, these are some are new, some are replacements of mud and inappropriate schools in general. There's about 50 of these, and we're indicating where these schools are. We've also provided a list of these schools There was a little error we've sorted out. I think one or two or a few schools were struggling to draw the line between when there are major upgrades and there's a replacement. There's been an issue in terms of where do you draw the line. If, for example, you had a mud school and one block was done 6 years ago and the other blocks remain mud and you are coming now and you're replacing the other three blocks, whether you call that a replacement school, whether you call it just additions, but that's an in-house thing which we're sorting out. I'm raising it because sometimes it accounts for the difference in numbers. But in the 2013-14 program that we're doing, there are 50 schools that would be new and replacements of MAD and inappropriate schools. Once more, we've circulated a list for those schools, which is indicating the name of the school and the district where the school is. We're also indicating on that slide that the process of being appointed for 30 additional schools by DPE is underway. We've received an appointment letter. We're now working on signing an agreement with DPE. The indication from DPE is that these 30 should be alternative construction methods. I think if you look at the earlier slide, which was indicating 4.7 billion in schools infrastructure, once more, not just national, this is combining all of the work that we're doing for provinces and the number of projects. The one other thing to note is that as we work for provinces, budget issues come into play. So whilst there might be 967 projects, 100 projects may be put on hold, for example, depending on the budget issues of the various provinces. So in a sense, you do have a go and stop, as the provinces are dealing with the whole fiscal matter in terms of management. And some of these projects, our clients would ask us to put on hold until they have confirmed certain issues, largely budgetary issues, and then to move ahead. So it's not like all of them are moving at one time, but we have been we have signed agreements with clients provincially and nationally to support them in schools infrastructure to this magnitude. This list is a list of the water and sanitation projects. Largely, this is part of the DPE school sanitation program. So many of these agreements are with the Basic Education Department. You can see the number of projects in the various provinces. These are projects that create an opportunity for an empowerment. But these are smaller projects. These would be asked either renovating or constructing sanitation facilities. And we are able to use lower-level contractors and therefore give the empowerment program impetus on this program. This is an indication of what is largely renovations. We've broken the total list into three. It's the total list, it's the new schools, it's renovations and upgrades, as well as the water and school sanitation program. So this is largely renovations. You can see that the bulk of the work is in Eastern Cape, as well as in KZN in terms of the schools program. This is where much of the backlogs are in relation to schools infrastructure. Again, what we do is informed by the provincial needs itself from a capacity point of view, the funding issues, as well as the decision by the province. We've also played a significant role in SIP 13, you know, which is the schools built program, social interest program, as part of SIP 13, as part of the PICC initiative. We've been appointed, I think, as an implementing agent of DPE, which on its own is a role that advances the work under the SIP 13. We've been, our appointment relates to 22 schools, 10 in Free State and 12 in Eastern Cape. IDT appointment for additional 30 schools to be constructed using ACM underway. That's the one I spoke about earlier, also still under DPE. Construction work in school is largely upgrades of existing mud and inappropriate structures. Maybe the word upgrade there is not appropriate, but the work that we would do where the schools are inappropriate would largely entail demolishing the old structures and putting new structures. In a number of schools, you would find that there were some interventions by government which where you have a combination. You've got proper structures in a school and you've got improper structures in one school. Appointed in KZN, Eastern Cape, Limpopo and Northwest for the sanitation, and we've been advised of our appointment of the intention to appoint us as a SIP 13 core coordinator with the TBSA. I think this confirmation of this appointment has been slow. We want to believe that largely due to the funding issues that are currently being sorted out with IDT, because part of our indication was that whilst we are very keen to undertake this role, we would struggle to fund it under the current circumstances until the funding issue is being resolved. So we want to believe that the conclusion of that appointment is affected by the funding issue. But we've been advised by the PIC's secretariat, as well as by in our engagements with the mother body, that we will play this role. If we now move to alternative construction methods, I must highlight that our work here has largely been in collaboration with Agreement SA. Agreement SA play a lead, I could even say a custodianship role in terms of alternative construction methods. I think we're defining what we mean, simple, any construction which is not conventional, in other words, not mortar and brick. ACMs are Agreement certified, complete building systems, substructure to roof. They are generally panelized systems. The importance of that is to understand that a large component of them is manufactured under factory environment in some form of panels, which are then brought on site. That's a general statement. For an ACM to be used in the public sector, it must be Agreement certified. Any use of an ACM which is not Agreement certified is breaking the law, in fact, in the country. I think this is to protect the state and its citizens. The certificate refers to a quality control manual that ensures that the system is installed according to standards. Agreement does an extensive job in this area. They do not only certify a system, but they put together a quality control manual which says the system shall be safe for utilization if construction is done under these circumstances. Departure from condition of certificate could invalidate the certificate. A contractor who is using ACM must be licensed by a certificate holder. I cannot rock up tomorrow and say I'm going to do construction using this method. I must be licensed by a certificate holder who retains a level of responsibility. The model is similar to the Kentucky franchise model. If I'm selling Kentucky, I would have been licensed by Kentucky, and Kentucky bears some responsibility for the quality of my product. So it's almost similar, almost like a franchise model. ACM can be applied to any design. However, issues of flexibility, there's a bit of a question mark in that you must design around the panels. Unlike in brick, because brick are smaller units, there are a lot of flexibility in terms of your design. So if you are designing ACM, you need to take into account the size of the panels. I think that's important. In terms of energy efficiency, the ACM system generally outperforms conventional brick when it comes to energy efficient. This is largely as a result of them mostly having an insulated core. So between their cladding, usually there's insulation which helps in issues of energy efficiency. In addition to that, the issues of earth tightness can be easily managed with ACMs compared to brick. From an environmental point of view, ACMs are generally more environmental friendly because the material that they use is inert, no off-gassing or flaking, and therefore people would not breathe any problematic particles from them. Safe, no toxic, recyclable, resource efficient, and environmentally friendly. From a local economic development, the contribution is dependent on the largely on the type of ACM. We've done a research using CSIR recently. Our research looked at three aspects of ACM. One, we wanted guidelines in terms of the applicability of ACMs. On what conditions is it appropriate to use what ACM? If you are going to the Northern Cape or you are going to Limpopo, where temperatures and weather conditions may vary greatly, which systems would be appropriate? That research was concluded by ACM, and it's been very productive for us. We've shared that with our mother body, Public Works. We've shared that with DBE. We've also shared it with the PICC. The other component of the research looked at a comparative analysis between conventional brick and ACM from a cost point of view, from a economic development point of view, in terms of what is it that government will lose if it uses ACM. And I think that also has been fruitful. I must, however, hasten to say that whilst that research is informative, the population used is limited because there's not too many ACMs that government has, or in schools that government has rolled out. But there are certainly good lessons we've got from that. The issue of cost effectiveness of ACM has been confirmed. I think also very much interesting was the issue of the ability of ACMs to introduce industrialization through the factories from a local economic development. In terms of that research, we've also confirmed that about 80% of ACMs are actually manufactured locally. In South Africa, with less than 20% which are imported, which is a major concern in terms of what ACM's government would use. ACMs promote local job creation, but with differentiated distribution. This is now between the factory and the site. We're saying whenever you consider job creation, do not only look at what is the site, but also consider the factory. The site opportunities are generally much shorter, because the construction is done within a shorter period of time. So when you compare them with brick, the brick would perform better on a site. But you know, if you bring in the factory component, this is where it creates industrialization and therefore offers us an opportunity to create decent work opportunities in addition to mere job opportunities. Benefits of using ACM, quality is generally higher. Or at least equivalent to conventional method. Because of the factory environment manufacturing of key components and only fabrication is done on site, therefore it facilitates good quality. Facilities can be delivered more quickly than conventional methods. Construction costs are generally lower than conventional. Thermal efficiency is often better, or at least equivalent to conventional. Delivery of material is made easier with panelized systems. Performs technically better, environmentally more sustainable, contributes towards local economic development, upskills construction industry. It brings into the industry a new skills. Local skills transfer is possible in terms of the site fabrication and assembly. We've said a whole lot of beautiful and good thing about ACM, There are limitations, however. I think it is important for us to highlight that. The long-term durability and the life cycle cost of ACM under local condition has not been tested. This is probably the most, impactful limitation of ACM. The current lifespan of a building, if you consider the standards from the national building regulations, makes reference to 30 years. Now we know that buildings can even, brick and mortar can even live for 200 years. And therefore, the reference to 30 years creates a problem because the scale is so low that ACM easily break that scale. So in other words, if you are to use that scale, ACM will no doubt live way more than 30 years, especially if well maintained. But whether they can give the same potential 200 years that you can get, I'm using just 200 years from the top of my head, knowing that there are a lot of structures which have been around for many years. So whether they can live that long is a matter that has not been tested under local conditions. The design must take into account specific needs of ACM. This is not a big one. All it says is that when you're designing a building, you need to take into account the system that you use, the size of the panels. I think designers can work around this one. Once of use of ACM in an area limits the benefits of skills transfer and the opportunity of utilization of the acquired skills, I guess this is an introductory kind of infancy challenge, in the sense that once ACMs are used extensively, we will resolve this problem. But currently, if you get into a space, you build a school using ACM, the local people would acquire skills. They may not find an opportunity to use those skills in the near future because ACM projects are fined apart. I think that's all that we're saying. More advocacy is still required to promote social acceptance, but the initial response has been very positive. On all the projects that the National Department of Public Works did, both in Eastern Cape and Northwest, the acceptance levels were very impressive. I think communities, schools, governing bodies welcomed the schools. I think the possible more significant one relates to the durability and the life cycle cost. The life cycle cost is raised because ACM generally has a more intense maintenance need compared to brick, and therefore government needs to take that into consideration as we deploy ACMs. Recommendations: ACMs offer a distinct advantage over conventional construction in relation to speed, cost, and quality. Considering the maintenance-intensive nature of ACM, it seems likely that the conventional would outperform ACMs in life cycle cost and lifespan. This is an area where we've said it has not been tested under local environment. However, if one considers the general nature of the maintenance the intensity required for ACMs, it is possible that bricks might outperform ACMs in this regard. We recommend that ACMs be considered as a feasible alternative to enhance delivery of schools infrastructure, particularly where agency is a primary factor. We think that ACMs have a definite role. We're not sure that ACM should generally replace bricks, but we certainly think that they have a definite role. And I think even as we move through grounding the role of ACMs, I think we need to be careful such that we do not undo the benefits of empowerment that have been done in the construction industry, keeping in mind that the owners of the ACMs currently are largely the previously advantaged communities, and we need to have deliberate programs that would assist assist to bring about the emerging contractors into the ACM space. This presentation, in conclusion, has highlighted the role that the IDT plays and has made and continues to play in the implementation of schools infrastructure. We are highlighting that we're not the driver or the responsible government structure for the program. I think the committee fully understands that we are the sent boys, in other words, a province would say, in other words, whilst it would be nice for us to be able to talk about what is government doing holistically on schools, we're generally not able to do that. We can always talk about our relationship with government and what we're doing. I think we just want to highlight that. I'm raising this because there have been questions before asked by the portfolio committee, which we would not necessarily be in a position to answer, but maybe a department like education, maybe, because these are the departments who get allocated the funding for schools infrastructure. I think as a conclusion, we indicated that the amount of work we do is dependent on the engagements and the relationships we enter with the provincial governments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the presentations. Honourable members, I think we need to engage with the presentations. But if my memory serves me well, the main purpose of this presentation was for the portfolio committee to check if Department of Public Works is reclaiming its mandate of building schools on behalf of the headline departments. And now we'll start with the engagement. Baba Kayla, Baba Stole, Honorable November, Honorable Ngwenyamabila Mahlopa in that sequence, and then Ngwenyamabila Nguan. Baba Kayla.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, Deputy Minister, there is a problem of the department not reclaiming its mandate. Yet it is very clear that Department of Basic Education has instructed that they want to build with alternative methods. This is a simple instruction, because the 30 schools, as IDT says, is going to be built with ACM. That's the instruction from Department of Basic Education. There's not much we can do. But I'm happy with the last part of your IDT's presentation. I got nothing against ACM, but you said it all in your presentation. First of all, the president has said that job creation is a core function of the department. Now, with ACM, there's not much job creation. That is where the problem is. You're sitting with thousands of emerging contractors in grade one. It means that forget about upgrading those contractors. We must not even talk about them anymore if you're using ACM. ACM is for the big guys. It's going to be manufactured in Gauteng, taken to site, built in 5-6 days, and that's that. And it has not been tested. It has not been tested. Sometime back, the former TBV State's Deputy Minister, an alternative method was used. That alternative method that was used then is giving us problems today. That's why we are rebuilding the school, because of that alternative method. Brick and mortar is tested. It creates work, creates employment for our people. Chairperson, if you remember very well, we say that we don't have a problem either, but a percentage of the project must be ACM. Not all the projects must be ACM, because it is not tested. Then Public Works presentation, I am happy with it, where you are saying that you're not going to use much consultants and you're going to have a standard drawings for the projects. We're going back to basic, Deputy Minister. That is what has been done before. Standard schools. It's been done before. And control over your consultants, because where it went out of the way is when the consultants had to decide what schools, what kind of paint to use, what designs to use, and so and so. But I am happy with that. But using ACM only, let's forget about job creation. Let's forget about upgrading the emerging contractors. And some of the ACM, they have been manufactured in Gauteng. Some of the companies are coming from overseas, opening factories where in Gauteng. And it's only those few that would benefit out of that. So really, I don't know how we're going to do, because unfortunately, we cannot tell the basic education what to do. They have decided they want to use ACM, as well as they decided they wanted to use ACD. You remember the last projects where they were using established contractors who could not even complete those projects in the Eastern Cape. It's those poor emerging contractors who completed those projects. And the minister, in my question, when she replied, she said she was surprised that the emerging contractors completed the projects in time. Now we are now busy destroying those emerging contractors. That is what we are doing. Simple, straightforward, we are destroying them. And unfortunately, the department hasn't got a mandate. You just have to accept whatever basic education is saying. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
First of all, Chairperson, the first three slides, we didn't receive it. There was nothing here. The last slide that they presented in this last presentation, we don't have here. And the second thing, Chairperson, that is worrying me is the lifespan and the life cycle of the constructions. If you are talking about safety, but on bricks and mortar, it was about 200 years. Now the estimation is only 30 years. How is going to be tested, because it has not been tested even before? And Chairperson, the other concern that I have, Chairperson, is that one of if you can check on slide number 4. No, page 4. On 844 work opportunities. What I want to get from the presenters, how many women and youths that have benefited from these constructions, from these job creations? And the 1.7 billion for women, how many actually women have benefited, how many contractors have benefited? Because if they just say what the two women, how many contractors have benefited, and how many youth on 667 million have been benefited, and 3.6 billion the BEE, how many contractors have benefited from that amount? If we can get the clarity on that one, Chairperson. And the other one, Chairperson, is that one of the claiming of the powers from our client department. There's nothing that has been said by the department. Are they claiming, or we just a puppet of other departments? This is, but we don't claim our powers from those departments. And the other one, Chairperson, it shows that there is one, I don't know what is that one, which have been built in it in Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. They say one school. What does that say? What does that mean? Because I couldn't understand what does that mean, Chairperson. they say they have constructed or renovated only one school in Gauteng and one school at KwaZulu-Natal. They can clarify that one, Chairperson. And the last one, Chairperson, that
thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, Chair. Good morning, Deputy Minister. First of all, really, I want to thank and appreciate this report that is in front of us. And also say thank you to those schools that have been built in the Siyanda region. I've seen here the three schools that I visited in the Qhara Heights region. The Babalelo, the Louisville, and Nkakamas really are schools of the nature. Thank you for that. They are best schools. It's only that we hope that the people that are going to use the schools will really maintain them. We thank you for that. And on the report of the department, it's just one question or a comment. It's on the draft memorandum agreement. There is no time that is stipulated then between the departments. Are we going for such a long time, or is it 2 weeks, or within 2 months, then the agreement has been signed? Because we need to see that the agreement has been signed, then we will know that really siyahamba kuni. With the IDT's report, a lot have been said by my colleagues. I won't go into that. It's just that the comment is that one is really worried about the lifespan of the alternative construction. We are old-fashioned. We are just used to bricks and mortar and not the other way around. But really, the lifespan is the thing. As you are saying that it has not been tested. Because we know that there are schools that we were also part of them. We'll just like to want to see that the alternative will also have a long, long, long lifespan. I thank you, ma'am.
Wanyamabila.
Thank you, Chair. Let me appreciate the presentation. Chair, my first comment is on the issue of the draft memorandum of agreement, which were not told when was in a draft form and what according to the plan. When are you going to finalize this agreement? Secondly, Chair, the department is saying that it's responsible for the management of the allocated schools to ensure delivery of quality projects on time and within budget. But to me, I think this is still a challenge. Monitoring, especially monitoring, is still a challenge. Because in most cases, you find that there are lots of incomplete schools. The service provider is gone, the money has been paid. Then you ask yourself, who was responsible for the monitoring of that particular project? And also the issue of the, I think will bear with me when looking at the Auditor General, the issue of the, what is this, the OVs, you know, because the project is taking long to be completed. Then the other one, Chair, is on the issue of, you know, when looking at the report, you're just telling us about the schools that have been allocated to the department. As this committee, our role is to oversight. We need to know when were these schools allocated so that we track, we monitor whether are you able to deliver on time. But if you just indicate the completion date, you can't just tell us about the completion date without telling us about the starting, you know, the starting date, so that you can be able to track the time, the duration of that particular project. But when looking at the report, in most cases you tell us about the completion date. So and also there's no progress with regards to what you have been given, that at this stage, where are you? Then the other one is, do you have capacity to meet the time frames that you have set for yourselves? 2 months delivery time, 4 months delivery time of the bill of quantities and whatever. Is there any capacity within the department to execute or to perform that? The other question is on the recovery system that you have said, you have indicated that the departments you implement, then you claim from the department. Because if I remember well, we've got the challenge of the departments failing to pay the Department of Public Works, the rental and the lease agreement, rentals and the fees. So are you able to get, when you implement and claim from the departments, especially the Department of Education, are you able to get your money on time? What challenges are you experiencing with regards to that? And on the IDT presentation, Chairperson, I was just looking at the presentation, looking to the one that I have. The figures are not tallying. That is what I've noticed. I'll make the examples. On page 5, you have said the presentation indicated 957, while the document that I'm having indicated 959. While I was checking on Mpumalanga, the number of schools projects have said to the document that I'm having, it indicates 15, but according to the presentation, it was 13. So that is why the presentation indicated 957, the document that I'm having, 959. The second slide. The total number of school, according to the presentation, it was 50. According to the document that I'm having, it was 55. While I was checking the figures, again in Mpumalanga, in the document that I'm having, it indicates 15, but according to the presentation, it was 10. Then again, page 6, current IDT schools infrastructure programs. The presentation indicated 586, while the document that I'm having is 583. So, when looking at the presentation in Mpumalanga, there were 3 schools, but in the document that I'm having, there's no schools under Mpumalanga. So I'm not sure, Chairperson, about the accuracy of the figures that they've been given to us. Then the other one, Chair, what I've noticed in the document, the lack of consistency in writing these reports. Under water and sanitation, they've given us the completion dates, but when coming to the IDT schools infrastructure, there are no completion dates. Because here we're talking of the projects, that is why I was saying we need to know the starting dates of this project so that we can track vis-a-vis the completion dates, whether there's progress or there are delays in the implementation of the project. Thank you, Chairperson. But what I want to indicate all in all, Chair, is that the figures are not accurate. I don't know which one we must take into consideration, whether the presentation or the documents that you are having. Can you be clarified?
Yeah, the document they brought today, they made some corrections. And the one that was directly sent to us, that's where the problem is. I think they will have to respond on that one. Honorable Matlapa.
Can I comment, Chair, before?
Thank you. Honorable Ngonyamabila, there are 2 documents. There's the one that was emailed to us during the week, and this is the one that they brought today. The figures are not the same. I hope the one that they brought today are the correct figures, because that's before they presented. I don't know. They will respond.
Okay, Chair, just to comment on the on that issue. I think we need not to accept the situation whereby documents are circulated in the meeting because it disorganizes us. We consider the documents that are sent to us on time. Then when you come to the meeting, a different document is being circulated. I think the department needs to note that the documents need to be circulated on time. And if there are changes, the changes need to be made on time so that when we come to this meeting, we are sure what is it that we're going to deal about.
Point taken, Matlopa. No, thanks, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Greetings to our DM and the entourage. Chair, yeah, my colleagues have covered me on the issue of memorandum of understanding, you know, because what I want to check on it is whether the department has considered the concerns that has been raised by the portfolio committee around the issue of building and claiming later, as they are saying. Whether is it part of the memorandum of understanding to say that if there is an agreement that the school will cost so much, the money just being transferred because you'll build the school and then maybe leave it incomplete because of insufficient funds if they don't, you know, transfer the money on time to the Department of Public Works. Also, I think my colleague covered me on the issue of the allocation of the school when they were given that particular mandate and also the issue of the completion. But if we can be clear as a portfolio committee, the number of schools that the IDT is going to complete in 2013-2014, so that we know exactly. I'm asking this, Honorable Chair, because Public Works, in its slide 6, they indicated 30 schools that has been allocated. And when you go and look at the IDT's annual performance plan, they indicated 50 schools. So I don't know which is which because that is the one that the IDT presented before us on the annual performance plan, that the total number of 50 new or replacement schools have been targeted for 2013-2014 financial year. And also when you look at the slides, Chair, I want to check this one. They have indicated, IDT. IDT in the years they have indicated 5 years, IDT expenditure in schools, five years. But one is not clear, Chair, here because in the first column or second column region and then the financial year they've indicated 2008-2010 or whether they've put two financial years in the same column because my understanding will be 2008-2009 as a financial year but now here they said 5 years but when you look at the columns they are 4 years but maybe the problem is there if they can clarify on that one. Also, Chair, on the IDT, they have indicated current IDT new replacement schools program 2013-2014. I'm not sure, Chair. Can they clarify because the budget, according to this one, is 2013-2014. But when you look at Free State, they also indicated April 2014 and October 2014. It is outside 2013-2014. How are they going to roll over those funds to the 2014-2015 financial year? Because here they have put 2013-2014. If they talk of April 2014, it is now 2014-2015 financial year. If they can clarify for us on that one. At the moment, Chair, I can pause there. Maybe I will come later. Honourable Nguyen will be followed by Mama Madla.
Thanks, Chair. I won't repeat what has been said by my colleagues, especially on the issue of the memorandum of understanding and other issues on the on the budget. But on the issue of work opportunities that have been created. I would like to know maybe if there are any skills transfers or and the close relationship with the regional CIDB offices, just to check whether there are any that is of any opportunity to the small contractors, because that, this is what we have been saying for a very long time. If there's and the BEEs, and would like to lastly maybe if we can before the end of the term maybe see some of these schools, and we did see some in the Eastern Cape, but just to have a feel on the other schools, especially in KZN and Eastern Cape, if possible. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, if I can make some comments on the IDT presentation. Firstly, just on what Honorable Stolle asked about the women contractors, service providers, if the IDT can explain to us that how many of these women contractors or service providers, because they simply say 31% of total program spent, but we're not sure how many of these contractors. Also applies to youth contractors, if you can be clarify how many of these youth contractors. Coming to triple BEE, we see that 3.68 billion is spent, but also again we want to know which are those triple BEE and where are they situated? If they can assist us with that information. My other concern, Comrade Chairperson, is that they say that there are some schools which are, I mean, there are projects which are still on hold and projects under construction. Are they really going to be completed by 2014? Because if I look, there are so many. For instance, in the Eastern Cape, they are saying 63 projects are on hold. In Free State, 3 under construction. When are they going to be completed? There are so many I can count. When are they going to be completed? Because in total, there are 583. Lastly, the infrastructure. For an example, in the KZN, about the number of schools, which are 91, which are on procurement stage. What is the target here? Because they said they're to be completed by 2013. Are they really going to be completed by 2013, or is that going to be beyond 2013 November? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mama. Deputy Minister, the beautification program, what is it? Does it mean fencing, building of laboratories, extra classrooms, or is it the grounds? Because I'm worried, we had a program called Rehabisha Tswane. Is it not the same program with Rehabisha Tswane? Can they unpack why is Limpopo given a priority? Are there strong reasons why? Can we get it from there? IDT, when we were in Willowvale, the main concerns that were raised by the portfolio committee was the creation of jobs and the lifespan. I thought IDT would have by now checked on the lifespan of alternative method. But even with brick and mortar, if you don't maintain your buildings, it doesn't say anything, because a building, according to the standards of public works, a building should be maintained 3 5 yearly, and if you don't maintain that, it will leak. Is the same with the alternative method? Is there a way of maintaining alternative methods? And can we be briefed about AGRIMA? Can you brief us on how to maintain an alternative method? Because I know that you put some ceilings there, the ceiling that can, when it's windy, the ceiling can jump up and down when it's not properly inserted. Can we get an explanation on that one? Thank you.
Make some general points, and obviously the colleagues both from IDT and from DBW, and maybe if the colleague from AGRIMA also wants to address some of the questions. So they will be able to talk to the detail. As you know, I'm just a politician, so not a professional in this space. But I think there have been, so if I could address three issues. I thought, Chairperson, that you began, first of all, to thank all of the colleagues for the, I think, the useful and constructive questions and criticisms that they've offered. I thought that you began a moment ago by reminding us that part of what this is all about is to what extent is the Department of Public Works reclaiming its mandate. I think that's a very important question, and so I'd like to talk briefly about that. I think the first issue is, what is our mandate? The incoming DG has pointed out to us that there's no funding, there's no legislation, founding legislation, which establishes the Department of Public Works and indicates what its mandate and reach and scope is or should be. So that's something we're working on. Obviously, we're not promising that we're bringing that kind of legislation to you before the end of this parliament, but it's something that we need to look at. But provisionally, what we're saying is that at the moment there are four legs or four pillars of this department. The one is to regulate the built environment, professions and industries, so both with standards in terms of built materials, like the one we're seeing there from AGRIMA, and the professions. CIDB, CBE, and so on are involved in that space, and as we are as a department in terms of what we do through legislation and regulation. The second area that we're involved in, the second leg of our mandate, still not properly legislated for, but our mandate would obviously be the property management of public buildings. We're the custodians of those public buildings, and we have a responsibility, therefore, to preserve and look after and maintain that huge property asset, okay? And that includes also the leasing function. So some of them are publicly owned, some of them are not, but they serve the purpose of public buildings, so they're leased, for instance, from the private sector. We have a responsibility in that space, and what we're trying to do there, as we've briefed the committee some months back, we're trying to coordinate that function more effectively with setting up properly, on a proper basis, the property management trading entity. We had it in name, but in fact it was just an account, basically. We are restructuring the department so that we maximize and coordinate much more efficiently, not in silos, that function. Then we coordinate the expanded public works program. So there are many line departments which are very central to the expanded public works program. One's, for instance, environment and working for water, working on fire and so forth. Social development, very involved in a lot of expanded public works, job opportunities and so on. But for the moment, at least, we have the coordinating function. That's a debate, by the way. Sometimes one suspects that we are coordinating the Expanded Public Works program because there's a coincidence of name between Department of Public Works and Expanded Public Works program or Community Works program. But for the moment, and certainly, and we think that that's one area of our department that is functioning relatively well. Many challenges, of course, as there are. And then finally, the fourth leg is the one we're talking about today, which is essentially responsibility in some form or another for the construction of public buildings, of public infrastructure, essentially public buildings, schools, clinics, and so forth, police stations and so on. So that's the other core function. And it's probably the area where we have many weaknesses, and we've been very frank about that as a department for historical reasons, but this is probably the area where we are most challenged. And as a result of that, what we found is numbers of line departments have been inclined to try and set up mini DPWs, and basic education might be one example of that. And understandably, out of frustration with the performance of the Department of Public Works, you know, because we've been unable to assist them with building or maintaining and taking responsibility for program management and so on, of the construction of schools and so forth, there's been a tendency in basic education, but in some of the other key line departments as well, to set up many DPWs, or to try to do so within in their departments. Now, I think that reclaiming our mandate is not a hostile, you know, not a competition between departments, but it needs to be a government-wide discussion, a cabinet-wide discussion, about how best we address this core function, one of looking after public buildings, maintaining them and so on, but also then constructing social infrastructure, public building infrastructure. And we are certainly very keen, the Minister and the Ministry are very keen, and the Department very keen, that we vastly improve our capacity in this area. So this discussion that we're having today needs to be understood as part and parcel of that. Now, what have we observed when we try to address this area? One, as I've said, we're self-critical. We've said we're not blaming basic education or COGTA or any number of other entities that are sort of pushing into the space. We understand why they're doing it. But we can't have dozens of mini DPWs. It's going to be dysfunctional. And I want to come and use one example of where I think there's an example of this with the Free State and the 10 schools. But, and maybe the colleague from IDT will help us to understand this better. Okay. Now, the first thing, and DDG has made this point in the DPW input, is that we don't have capacity as DPW. We have bits and pieces, but we don't have effective capacity to program manage the construction, for instance, of a CE schools. We don't have that. We don't have that capacity, and we must be honest about that. We mustn't claim a mandate and then and promise, push others out of the way, and then actually fall flat. It would be completely irresponsible. But what we do have is IDT. Okay. Now, IDT has its own challenges and problems, and so forth. First of all, it's no longer a trust. It's a trust in name. But that 2 billion, which was basically the history of IDT, was that it was established, as we know, in 1990 by the apartheid regime. It was basically an apartheid government intervention, but trying to disguise itself as not being an apartheid government intervention, as an independent trust. Okay. And it was basically an end-game move politically by the apartheid regime, wanting to create a black middle-class buffer class to try to, I won't go into the politics of all of that, but you can imagine what it might be. So it was funded with a 2 billion rand, and at that stage quite a substantial amount, a trust fund. Because of the growing work and usefulness and importance of IDT in the space that it operates, it's long since spent. There's no trust. So it's inappropriate to call it a trust, although that's still its name. It's totally wrong to call it independent. And back in 2007, Cabinet said as much. It said it must be a state entity in some form. It can't be some NGO. It is functioning and must function as an IDT. But we are critical as a department, self-critical, that over the years we've tended to treat them as if they were independent. And we've not therefore exercised effective governance over IDT. And that's something we're trying to correct. So if we want to fulfill our mandate and move into and reclaim our mandate in the space of constructing, then what we've got potentially is a very important capacity. And I think our input from the DDG made that point well, that there's capacity, uneven, with its own challenges, of course, but there's serious capacity in IDT. But we've not effectively used it or exercised effective governance over that. One example is that for the last several years, Treasury's been saying the trust is gone. How do we fund it? What is the business case for IDT. Now, instead of the Department of Public Works taking responsibility for developing that business case, we've allowed IDT to develop its business case. Now, IDT is going to develop a self-interested business case. I understand that everyone's not blaming the individuals. And Treasury each year round, since I think 2007 and 8, has said, sorry, you're bloating the figures, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so Treasury's never accepted the business case. Now, it's not IDT's fault or Treasury's fault. It's our fault as Public Works. We have not asserted. It's our entity. It's an entity answerable to the minister. But we've not exercised leadership and governance in that respect. So that's something that we are now very actively busy with, and we would like to report to you quite soon on how we are developing, not asking the IDT, we must develop, we must take political responsibility, developing the mandate, and then on the basis of the mandate, the business case for IDT. Okay. So I just thought I'd talk broadly about that. I know it's very broad still, and I don't want to give the impression that we're all just busy doing policy and developing mandates and working and so on for IDT, and everything must wait. Obviously, everything must go ahead. We must press ahead with building schools, maintaining schools, beautification, whatever that might mean, and so on. We need to do all of those things, but at the same time, learn lessons and really, as you correctly, I think, Chairperson, it was absolutely right of you to say, you know, at the end of the day, we're trying to assess, is the department claiming its mandate, reclaiming its mandate? Not for the sake of course, we want to build an empire or whatever, but why is there a Department of Public Works? If we can't answer that question clearly, then we should abolish ourselves and do something else. So we're trying to give an indication of how we're moving. If I could then address a couple of specific things, not necessarily in technical detail, because the colleagues are much better, obviously, than I am at doing that. Just on the alternative construction methods, because that's become quite an important central theme of the two inputs and of the questions that have come. The Honourable Gila, who's left, unfortunately, he's a brilliant shop steward for emerging contractors. Okay, he asks one question in different forms, always consistently, and that's very good because I think because that is a priority as a country and obviously as a department to ensure the development of small and emerging contractors in the built environment thing. However, that's not the first priority on the topic we're talking about. The first priority is to address the crisis of school accommodation of kids, and particularly rural kids, particularly black kids in our country. So that's the first priority. The first priority is not to create work for emerging contractors, but as we address the first priority of school construction, the CD-built school, the inappropriately constructed schools, the schools that are falling down and so on. As we address that, we must also then, as best as possible, introduce all of the other things. So I just wanted to remind ourselves of that. That's the first priority. Okay. Which is why, obviously, we are taking very seriously alternative construction methods. Okay. Because on the evidence, it certainly enables us to move more quickly, in principle, to reach many, many more communities, localities, and therefore many more children with the budget that we've got. And remember, global economic crisis, our own economy is suffering and so on. So we really need to use our money wise and well and spread it as much as effectively as possible. So alternative construction methods are very important. It's not the Department of Basic Education that is dictating to us to do this. It's a cabinet-wide decision. The Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, meeting in its plenary, with the support, by the way, of the DA colleague, with the support of the Premier of the Western Cape, because she too is a member of the PICC, said that with new schools and new clinics, we want to move over the next 3 years to 60% of those being built through alternative construction methods. We want to push into that space quite dramatically. So that's a big challenge for Agrimar, it's a big challenge for IDT and for ourselves and so on. And that's why I was very pleased that the inputs also reflected that sense of priority and the importance of alternative construction methods and materials and using them. There are challenges, and I think it's important to be honest about those. Many advantages, but also challenges. And everything has its pros and cons, and we need to weigh those up carefully. So the idea is 60% over a three-year period, starting from next year, essentially, but beginning now as much as possible with alternative construction methods. I think, obviously, the dangers are, as the colleagues have signaled, that often when people hear alternative construction methods, they hear another container as a school classroom or something like that, or white communities have nice brick school buildings, historically white communities, you're giving us second class stuff. I think it's very important as South Africans to understand that in the United States, in Germany, in the United Kingdom, in Canada and Australia, alternative construction methods are being used very actively, never mind also developing countries. So I think that's important to understand. Now, of course, they need to be adapted to our geographical and topographical realities. We understand that, and that was the point that was made well by the colleagues as well. So when we talk about the uncertainties about lifespan, we're talking about uncertainties here in South Africa. But there's very extensive and quite prolonged international experience. As I say, that needs to be adapted realistically to our situation. And there's not one South African situation. Northern Cape is not the same as KZN, and so on. But just to make that point, so we need to be not overselling the thing and understand the potential shortcomings, but also understand that there's vast first world experience with these materials, and there are many advantages. So also to make that point. Okay, then there are many other things I'd like to say, but the very last point, sorry, I'm talking too long, but the very last point I wanted to say is I really thank the colleagues who are being meticulous about the statistics and figures. I think the criticism that was made to the colleague from IDT, because what we're told by the DPW input is that one of the things that the IDT has and that we don't have is a much better IT system and it's able to monitor. Well, if it's got such a good IT system, it should be able to press it, you know, control F1 or whatever, and pump out accurate statistics. I know that one's dealing with the shifting terrain and things come and go and so on, so things do change from day to day, but I think the criticism is correct, that ideally we should get, I mean, as you did, you needed to say, look, there's a bit of an arithmetical error here, errors make sense, but it was a bit of a shifting goalpost that you provided us with, and I think that obviously we would like, I think it's correct to insist from all of the inputs that we make that as much as possible, what we get ahead of the portfolio committee should be as close as possible to what then gets presented. There might be correct, understandably, I think, but just to make that point. But really, the statistics are not so much about PSYNC for its own sake, whether we're parliamentarians or deputy ministers or whatever. It's much more to learn lessons. What are the statistics telling us so that we can correct? And I'm sure that's the spirit in which we're all raising. When we get close to elections, then some of us will be using the statistics to boast and some of us will be using the statistics to be critical. But for the moment, I think what we all share is we're trying to learn lessons to see what interventions do we need to make in order to improve. What are the stats telling me? So let me select one, which I think one of the colleagues was mentioning. If you look at my version of IDT, the pages are not numbered, but when it talks about their CD schools, there are 10 CD schools in the Free State for which the IDT has taken responsibility. Okay, and it's saying that the site handovers, so this is for this budget year in theory, 13-14, but the site handovers haven't yet been completed. So might just have been complete because the completion is July 13th, so this month, we're hoping. So we've lost a whole lot of months in terms of site handover, and therefore the completion is only going to be October 14th. Now, ideally, what we should be doing and what the pressure we should be putting on ourselves is that there should be new schools for the new school year in January, February, that's what we should do, and particularly if we're using alternative construction methods and the speed and so on that they offer. Now, why is that the case? Now, I happen to know why that is the case, because in the PICC we've had a briefing from IDT on this matter. And the problem is that because DBE
has set up its own mini DPW in DBE, the basic Department of Basic Education. There are a whole lot of layers of who's signing off on the appropriateness of the site and so forth. So instead of streamlining it, this delay, as I understand it from IDT, and the colleague can perhaps confirm or otherwise, has to do with IDT's done all the work, basically, and confirmed that these sites are appropriate and so on, but can't sign off on it until DBE and DBE's mini DPW has also signed off on it. So I think that I'm wanting to use that example, if my information is correct, I'm wanting to use that example not to point fingers at DBE or whatever, but to learn lessons collectively in government, to say that we understand why you set up a mini DPW in DBE, because we weren't playing our role as Department of Public Works. But the problem with that is then that everybody's playing in the space, and what it does is it creates bureaucratic red tape clutter. And so that hopefully that's the message that you will also send back to us. Let's strengthen our mandate and criticize us as the Department of Public Works for our weaknesses in that respect. But if we are to reclaim our mandate, we also need to learn lessons from the clutter that we've got, the institutional clutter that we've got. So I'd be interested to see whether the colleague will confirm my impression about the delay there on Free State. He's nodding his head. I hope that's to say that I'm right. So that we, as I said, the key thing is to use statistics and to monitor very closely what's happening, progress and so on. So the colleagues are raising it absolutely right. To monitor very closely so that we can intervene quickly rather than allow things to drag and so forth. And that's where the tough parliamentary questions are so important for all of us, certainly in the exec. So it went on too long, but I was inspired by, I thought, the excellent questions that colleagues were asking, but also I thought the useful inputs that were made. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Thanks, Chair.
Yeah,
thanks, Chair. Around the question of the draft MOA, I think the first thing to say is that I will take the question back to the department, because there is an appointed project manager for this, so that we can get clarity with respect as by when do we anticipate to sign it, and we should communicate that back to the portfolio committee. I have to say, however, the context, especially the latter part that was given by the Deputy Minister, provides a bit of a context as to why it's taking so long for us to conclude this agreement. I can give an insight that I had gone to the PICC with DBE to provide a brief, and then again, that was towards the end of last year, at the center of that discussion and the resolution we were given was that we need to conclude an agreement of how we're going to work. Now, that has been eluding us for the reasons I think the Deputy Minister has alluded to. But I'm committing here that I will take the question back to the department and the project office for this project so that we can have an answer we present in writing to the portfolio committee. The other set of questions dealt with the issue of when are these schools starting and where are we and so forth. The genesis is the agreement. These are the intentions. None of the schools have been given to Public Works yet. We need that agreement as a basis, as a governing document, as a control document that allows us to do the things that we can do. So there is no yet an allotment. This is an intention. This is what has been indicated to say this is what we are thinking of giving to Public Works. But you can't do anything without having a contract. We need to sign it. So I just want to bring clarity to that. Public Works has not been given anything yet. This is an intention to be given to Public Works. The question was asked, do you have capacity to deal with this? In the context of this project, this program, I can confirm here that we have already appointed the joint team for this particular project to do the things we have said in the context of our framework that we are proposing to Department of Basic Education, to say the people who will do these bills of quantities, the people who will do the standard designs, they're already on board. We are waiting for the agreement, so we're in a state of readiness. The appointments have been done. For this particular program, we have that capacity. The question of recoverable. Yes, DPW has acknowledged the question around the billing system. What I want to highlight, the problem of the billing system is more on what is reflected in our allocation. Our allocation has two components. It's the what is appropriated to public works as a vote, and what is also appropriated to our client departments, I guess, reflected in our PMT account. That is where the problem resides. It finds more expression in the leasing portfolio. Within the construction environment, we've got an additional arrangement that is called the recoverable account. The recoverable account will not be reflected on our appropriations, and you will not see it necessarily on our PMT account, but it can be reflected. It is sitting in our clients' accounts. It's an arrangement that says we do. It's as if we are the contractor. You do work, you present your payment certificate, you confirm that the work has been done, then you release the money. That is the basis on which it is done. It is not done for all of our clients. I made an example of one, that is the Department of Defense, that have a recoverable facility where we are doing strategic projects for them on their behalf. When we claim and saying, here's a payment certificate, this is the work that is a progress, they confirm it, then they pay. It's all done within the contract provisions that allow that within the submission of a payment certificate that is claiming, within 21 days it gets paid. So there's sufficient facility in terms of our overdraft to be able to take care of that. So that would not arise as a particular problem. The question was asked, why Limpopo in terms of the districts? They are what was proposed by DPE in our engagement of saying these are the pilot district municipalities that we would want you to start. As to why they propose those particular ones, we don't have insight into that rationale, ma'am. But it is what they proposed was to start in terms of the beautification program, to say we would want you to start there. In the initial engagements, it wasn't only those districts, so that I can declare. In the initial parts of the engagements, you will assist me, I think the Montfrey area, I can't remember the district name, was also part of the pilot. I'm not in DBE to know the rationale in terms of saying this is the pilot they would want us to go into. I think I've covered the questions in terms of grouping them.
Beautification.
I've asked my colleague to give further detail. We've been dividing the questions amongst ourselves. He's going to go into the detail thereof. But I don't want to contradict him. I want to hear his understanding, and I'll just embellish it or clarify to if there's a misunderstanding. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Chair, thank you. Maybe let me start with the beautification. It's a program, Chair, which looks at making the school's environment better through addressing, I should say, low-hanging fruits. An assessment of a school, some projects may be of an infrastructure nature, but lighter or minor infrastructure nature. In other words, it may be windows that are broken. It may be painting that is required. It may be fencing that needs to be undertaken. It's saying you could even look at it as part of, should I say, lighter maintenance, but stretching it slightly beyond that just maintenance, just to make a school. So what we do in one school or what is done in one school will be different from what is done in the other school, as would to be informed by the evaluation or assessment at each school. The Department of Basic Education has allocated, I think, about 500,000 per each school, which is meant to look at such interventions.
Chair, it's not contradicting my understanding. I just want to add more what our understanding is as Public Works also of what this means. In the context of understanding what education is, and I'm not an expert in this field, but in understanding what education is all about, it's not only about being in the classroom. It's also about the required extramural activities that complete and make education holistic, that are important in this program. You would note a lot of the schools in South Africa built for the previously disadvantaged communities didn't contain all the requisite facilities that complete the cycle of education. We would not have school fields, track fields, and other facilities that complete the education process. That is our understanding, to add on what my colleague has said from IDT, is so that where there are already schools, they need to be provided with the requisite infrastructure that can complete the education experience and provide the requisite outcomes, so that the schools are actual schools, not just classrooms that are empty. However, where I may start to contradict my colleague is the aspect of saying it goes further in my understanding, that is to say, where there are no laboratories, we provide laboratories. In those, how do you retrofit existing classrooms so that they have laboratories beyond just the superficial aesthetic elements of the school? The functionality elements of the school also need to be addressed, in my understanding, in terms of that program, so that it becomes a much more of a functional facility. Thanks, Chair.
Follow up.
Sorry, Chair. On this beautification of the schools, to DPW, before you used to have a National Youth Service program, is it included in this beautification of schools? Because it is specifically, it was specifically meant for the youth. And lastly, it's about the already 900 schools have been mentioned, but about the libraries, I know it's maybe not your it's for the Department of Basic Education to specify to you about the libraries, laboratories, and the sports ground. There are no specific to say. You said it's an addition. You add the libraries and to this beautification as well, or is it a separate program? Thanks.
Madropa? Thanks, Honorable Chair. Maybe I did not hear well the encroaching of 2013-2014 financial year to 2014-2015. How are they going to deal with that? Because the other projects, they have put a report with the heading of 2013-2014, but it exceeded 2013-2014 financial year to April, October, 2014-2015. How are they going to deal with that? And I did not hear how many projects the IDT are going to be completed in 2013-2014 financial year for the school. I did not hear the response well, maybe. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. With respect to the National Youth Service, the National Youth Service is still within Public Works in terms of how it's implemented. The question of whether IDT would want to use the National Youth Service program in implementing the project, I think that is for IDT to respond to, but we would encourage them to do so because it's part of how we are providing sustainable work for the youth in our country. So that is a program still in Public Works, and we would actively encourage IDT once the appointment is made so that they can use that program as part of the implementers. The question around additions, I just didn't get it right, Chair. I don't know if I could ask the member to assist me again.
Sorry, Chair. Yeah, but you did mention that it's not only the beautification. Even the libraries, the laboratories, and the sports ground are added to this 900. Because actually, when I saw this, the presentation, I mean, it was not specified as to whether the libraries, it was like the priority is just to beautify the schools. That's what I was asking. But you made mention of it that it's also included in these 900 schools. Thanks.
Chair, all I want to say, that is our understanding. Remember, the agreement is going to clarify all of those things. And the point I was trying to make is maybe trying to manage the fact that the naming of the program is probably bedeviling it. When you are hearing the word beautify, you are quickly driven to think this is just to deal with aesthetics, not with some of the functional elements. And I was trying to articulate the point that our understanding, it goes beyond just aesthetics. It goes beyond, you must provide some functional elements also in that process. Thanks.
The scope of work is defined not by us, but by basic education or provincial education departments. So I think that's the issue. But I agree that beautification suggests it's just like a cosmetic one-off low-hanging fruit polish up, you know, rather than transformation.
Chair, thank you. Chair, if I start with the number of schools to be done in 2013-14, maybe it's important to indicate that the programs reflected under the presentation, when we say 2013-14, we're actually referring to the unit of work that we're doing within that financial year. What we do, Chair, where a department has undertaken its planning in time, we may even be appointed towards March, which means that early in the financial year the work may start. We are still engaging with many departments as we speak, so some of the appointments by client departments will even be in November, which has got an impact in terms of what gets completed within a financial year. So we are reflecting our program for a financial year. The completion dates of projects would then be skewed depending on when our appointment was and the length of the specific projects. If our appointment was earlier in the financial year, the likelihood of that project being completed in that financial year becomes high, and something is, and the outcome is different if the appointment was later towards the financial year. But there's a specific question raised that in 2013-14, this current financial year, how many schools we intend to build. We have targeted, as Honorable Madloba has identified, to finish 50 schools in this year. There's a coincidence in the 50 schools as on page 5 and the target of 50 schools. That is not the same thing. Of the 50 schools on page 5, we have targeted to finish 36 in the 2013-14 financial year, with the remaining 14 schools being the ACM schools. So there's a relationship between this report and what is on our annual plan in terms of finishing 30 schools, 50 schools. When we do the target of how many schools we would want to finish, it's based on estimate during the, we do the annual or the annual plan in the previous year. So we sit and look in terms of what do we anticipate we would do. Remember, honorable members, we have got no control in where we get appointed. So we then say we would like, and looking at what we've done in the past and the discussions that we have, we would say we should be able to do 50 schools. But it's not that at the beginning of the financial year we already know those schools. We might know some, but some we would know as the year unfolds. So of that 50, which is here, 36 should be finished by March, financial year end, and an additional 14 to get to our target would be a contribution from the alternative construction methods. The figures are huge. We had close to 1,000 projects that we're managing. And when we did the list, we noticed, for example, in Mpumalanga, we're doing two huge schools, boarding schools in Mpumalanga, some of which each school, including the boarding school facilities, is over 150 million. We noticed that some of those projects were broken into two phases. And therefore, from our system, when we did the initial list, would be counted twice. But when we were now developing the actual list, we would see that this is the same school phase one and the second school phase two. So that those smaller adjustments account for the difference between the 957 and the 959. But there was also
I think additional three schools, when we scrutinized them, we concluded that the work undertaken on those would not be classified either as renovations, and we removed them from the list. So there were those little things on the list of 1,000, but we apologize and note the matter raised. Women and youth participants, we can certainly provide these numbers. I think we focused on the value when we were doing the presentation, that this is the amount spent on them. But those numbers are readily available, and we can forward them maybe to the secretariat of the committee in terms of how many youths, how many women, and how many BBB contractors benefited in the program. And the last question, I think related to the ACM's lifespan, we actually posed this question in the as part of the research that we commissioned CSR to do for us. Their response was, elsewhere, ACM have been used for years. Yes, I think as the Deputy Minister was indicating, but they were simply saying they are unable to give us a conclusion in the context of South Africa, because in the public, in the social infrastructure in South Africa, they are a new phenomenon. But ACMs in general are not new. I also wanted to clarify that we certainly are not saying ACMs would live for 30 years, not at all. We believe that they would far surpass the 30-year mark, as the brick does when maintained, far surpass. But all we're saying is their lifespan has, in the South African context, has not been tested. And lastly, we certainly support the idea of introducing ACM to play a prominent role in the social infrastructure. I think what we all need to look at as government in general is ensuring that as we do so, we do not undo the gains. In other words, we find ways and means of bringing in emerging contractors to participate in the ACMs. Thank you, Chair.
I want also to give Agrima South Africa an opportunity, but before that, I just want to check if there are any variations in ACMs. For this brick and mortar, government is faced with a lot of variations. Can we be assured whether there are any variations when using ACMs?
Thanks, Chair. Variation orders, Chair and members, are a phenomena that you cannot escape from. I think that's the first thing we need to acknowledge. There is a level, however, at which they become unacceptable because they start to reflect lack of planning. Contracts provide for scheduled and unscheduled variation orders. That relates to terms of saying when a facility was specified, you give a particular level of tolerance for things that can be adjusted, because between a plan and actual implementation, there can be deviations as a result of what you do on site and what you encounter on site, or things that were omitted not consciously in the planning phase. So to answer your question directly, they will not eliminate variation orders, but it is not a function of whether you're using conventional or unconventional. The problem is about planning. Is the planning done properly? Are you using the right professionals at the right phases of the asset life cycle? That even says, as what Public Works is saying now, the role of professional services in Public Works must stop to being only in the acquisition phase. Because if you look at Giyama, Chair, Giyama breaks up the asset life cycle into four components. It says there's a planning cycle, there's an acquisition cycle, there's an operating cycle, then there's a decommissioning or disposal cycle when you have to dispose. Currently, our model is that professional services are only involved in the acquisition phase, where there's actual construction, once we've received a planning instruction. We're saying that is the center of the problem. Professional services must be available even in the planning stage, so that when the plans are being made and conceptualized, the right technical input is made upfront there, so that you are mitigating and limiting the change of scopes in projects when planning instructions go out. And you must also observe segregations of duties and functions, because the people who are planning must not be the same people who are actually implementing, because you could have a very dangerous situation of vested interest across the entire value chain. So the operating team for the planning phase must be a different team that must make sure specifications are responsive to the things that needs to be done. A different team of professionals that must now actually implement the specifications within the governing constructs of a contract when you're acquiring. And another team that must manage the operational phase, the maintenance issues when you're operating, and another team when you're dealing with issues of disposal, so that the decisions you make are informed on sound basis by people who actually know what they're talking about. I elaborated a bit on your question, but I think I needed to give context to it. Thanks, Chair.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. I think... Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think I'm partly covered because my concern is around the issue of the planning. Because when IDT is responding to our questions, they present to us APPs to say this current financial year will be delivering so much schools. But now in their response, they are saying it will depend when they finalize the issue of, SCM, you know, when they are tendering, which time, you know. Because my understanding, the medium-term expenditure framework gives the departments the time to plan, to say that if this financial year it's a planning phase for the project that will be implemented in the next financial year. And then when you give us the figures, our understanding is that it's what you can deliver in that particular financial year. So I think the issue of planning really needs to be looked at the way that we understand, because last time the 1 year was not enough to plan, but now 3 years. If you're going to implement a project, maybe this year is a planning year, but the time you give us the figures, we expect that you deliver what you have presented before us. But also on the issue of the 50 schools as per the annual performance plan presented by IDT vis-a-vis these 30 schools that is on the MOU. I heard Public Works saying that, no, those schools, they are not yet given. Those schools. For which financial year are these schools going to be implemented? It's not 2013, 2014. We are still discussing. You'll come back with a correct report to say that now we are giving these schools, it's part of our target to implement it, because it must be clear, because we're looking at what was presented before us in the annual performance plan of 50 schools. And now Public Works is saying we have also allocated 30 schools to IDT. Our understanding was that it's over and above 50. They are given in 2013-2014. Maybe if we can get a clarity so that we can trace it to say that is it supposed to be implemented now or in the next future. Thanks.
Honorable November.
Okay, I'm covered.
Chole.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question has been covered because my concern was that one of schools that are allocated to IDT and DPW. So now the question has been asked. But the other one, is Chairperson, is that one of new and replacement schools completed. In Eastern Cape, they just say only one school has been completed. The whole of Eastern Cape and Gauteng, only one school. I want to find out is that new schools or replacement schools that have been completed.
Banyamabila, did you raise your hand? Oh, okay. It's the stories.
Myself.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. It's just a comment, one or two comments on the responses by the department. For instance, about the variation orders,
I mean, it's good that you agree that it's bad planning. It's due to bad planning. But as far as I know, is that there is a certain percentage that is given for variation orders. But in most cases, you always exceed that percentage, which is really a big concern because you end up, I mean, paying almost double or three times the amount of the building. Okay, coming to the the planning. Do you include or rope in CPE because there are engineers there, there are the quantity surveyors and all that? I mean, just to during the planning session, just. Because this is what we have been saying as the committee members, that there's CBE, there's IDT, there's AGRIMA South Africa. Why don't you work together as sort of as a team under Public Works? Lastly, it's about these the ACM products. Is there any possibility of these being manufactured in South Africa, especially in areas like KZN? You can see there are so many schools that need to be built, and in the Eastern Cape, and it will be part of the job creation in those areas, instead of these manufactured in Johannesburg, in Gauteng, and in the big cities. And transporting the those will also cost a lot. Thanks.
One more time.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I haven't had any response from one of my questions about the current IDT schools infrastructure program, because there's a slide here we're having, I don't know, but it was skipped when the presentations were made, that there are projects which are on hold. For instance, in the Eastern Cape, there are 63. In Northwest, there are three. In Northern Cape, there are two. Now, my concern is that these projects are to be completed by 2014. Now, I want to know what is going to happen about these projects which are still on hold. Are they going to be completed also by 2014? Thanks, Chairperson.
Wanyamabila. Covered. Menir, thereafter.
I'm fairly new in the committee, and I don't know if the question isn't at this stage valid. I want to hear, do we know how many schools are still mud schools, and when do we think to complete revamping it in the ACM method or the mortar and brick method? How long will it take? Because that's the main issue which we are sitting with. There's schools that that are not schools, that the people are sitting under trees and so on. If it's not valid for this, then I will accept it like that. But that's one of the things which are mentioned quite often. With the ACM method, I haven't really got a problem, because I mean, I know of schools which as classrooms which are built with a pre-method of this, which is standing for 30, 40, 50 years. So that's not to me a problem. But as the Deputy Minister said, the people must accept it. That's actually the main thing. Not comparing it that the other people has got brick and mortar school, and why must I get this? That's the main change of mind which must get to our people. If that's the method that will solve the problem of South Africa quicker, why not? With housing, it's the same thing. A house can be built within one day, but now the people are complaining, why? So to me, if the question isn't at this stage, because the Department of Education is not here, if DPW can't answer, then I'll accept it.
IDT Department. and then you'll be followed by Agrima.
That's fine. Thanks, Chair. I'm not going to try to attempt to speak for DBE, but from what we have seen, DBE does know how many, what the backlog is. They've got a backlog database, and I think the question of how long it will take is a function of saying, what method do we adopt? Because that determines the rate at which we claw back the backlog. The question of using CBE in the planning phase, again, I'm not going to try to attempt to speak on behalf of the CBE. The CBE CEO is here, but the CBE does not have professionals in it. The CBE is a regulator of the professions, so they can't provide us with professions. Just to indicate on that particular aspect, but I'm sure the CBE CEO can elucidate further. On the question of the schools that are said have been allotted to Public Works and allotted to IDT, I want to ask members to please go back to slide 6 of our presentation. Because in there, we are clearly articulating what it is that is under discussion. We are saying, in terms of our discussions, there are 64 schools that have been identified for upgrade. Out of those, 30 have been allocated directly to IDT by DBE. So they have entered into a direct contract with IDT. It's out of that 64. Then the balance of that is 34, is what is under discussion for allotment to Public Works. As I've already explained, we can't engage on anything till we have a signed agreement and a contract. In the interim, as we're indicating, we're currently doing a very high-level desktop study of those particular 34 allotted in terms of what can be done. So I hope I've brought some level of clarity in regards to those numbers. Then obviously IDT, in the way it implements and as it explained, I'm not also attempting to speak on your behalf, but this is my understanding. It's not only DBE who is their client in terms of education. They also have provincial education departments that raise that number from 30 to the number they reflect. And in terms of who in which province then becomes that particular total spread. They're consolidating in terms of what they have as contracts. We are raising what we have in terms of our engagements to assist them as part of SIP 13. I hope I've clarified, Chair. I'm very tempted to enter to answer a response around planning, but it's not the subject matter of this briefing. I would rather refrain. But there's still a lot to be said around planning. There's a discussion in the department and a debate around it and the role Public Works play. I'm just giving you quick snippets that as a department, if you look at us in the red book, that National Treasury book, the budget book, you will see Public Works is classified as an administration department. And if you note all the other administration departments, notably DPSA and National Treasury, you will note they have transversal functions across the whole of state in terms of other departments. And they all have enabling acts that allow them to do so. DPSA has got a Public Service Act. National Treasury has the PFMA. Public Works has GIAMA. But it's about how have we operationalized GIAMA for us to exercise our rightful space within the state machinery. But I don't want to enter that debate now. It's still under discussion. There's a lot to be said around planning beyond just the operational issues. There are also strategic issues about how are we actually running the state machinery. Thanks.
Chair, thank you. Chair, I'm set to respond to this with Honorable Matlopa out, because it's a question that she had raised, the question about the targets that, for example, the IDT would provide in the annual plan. Chair, the committee has raised this a number of times. Chair, when we're doing an annual plan, we take a leap of faith, we become brave. We say to the committee that we will deliver 7 billion worth of programs, that we will deliver 50 schools, that we will spend X amount on BBBE, that we will create X job opportunities. None of that, Chair, is based on contracts that would be existing before the financial year starts. We have no way of doing that because we support government. So what we mean is the same way a private sector company would do, what we mean is we will go out there, sell our services, secure the opportunity to provide support to government to that level. The same way a marketing company would say we're targeting sales of 1 billion this year. And when they say so, they have no guarantee on that. So I wanted to respond to say, it's not like when we say 50 schools, these are 50 schools signed, we know for sure. Which is why we're saying that some are still coming to complete the 50 that we've targeted. Some will be through the ACMs in terms of what are finished within the current financial year. There was a question raised about whether the manufacturing plants cannot be set up closer to where the construction happens in KZN, in Eastern Cape, etc. We believe that this will be possible when we reach the sort of levels that the Deputy Minister spoke about in terms of the rollout of ACM construction methodologies. At the current moment, these projects are far and apart, so it would not be practical for any firm to set up manufacturing plants in provinces. But when we say that ACMs promote industrialization, it is part of the government's objective that decent job creation will be created through these firms. And the last question is related to the projects on hold. As we say, Chair, we provide, we are a government capacity providing program management. So we get affected by the challenges that government face. So if government has funding challenges, government might decide that, put that on hold until our budget is all right and then proceed. So the projects that are on hold, some will be completed, some might not. It depends on when the clients are able to resolve the reasons that inform putting the projects on hold. Yes, thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Agrima?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Deputy Minister, ladies and gentlemen. My question is to respond to the maintenance needs of the alternative construction methods. Firstly, I must say that Agrima South Africa, as part of the assessment process, we do carry out a durability assessment as part of all evaluations. This is just to answer the question that they have not been tested locally. These products have been tested in a lab. One may argue that testing them in a laboratory is testing them within a controlled environment. Yes, that is true. But that is more onerous than actually testing it out in the field. Because when it's put in the laboratory, there's a machine, they call it the QSAN, which tests the outside environment within a confined period of time. It's a period of about 2 months period, during which these particular products are put in that particular machine, which then simulates the effects of whether the heat, the sun, the rain, the climate, the natural environment, the salty weather within the coastal areas, etc., etc., and within a confined period of 2 months, which simulates a lifespan of the material out in the fields. So that test within the lab is more onerous than a test within the field. I take the point mentioned by the Honourable Deputy Minister that these products have been tested overseas for years and years. And some of the major buildings in the world, you'll be surprised to know that they're built out of these alternative construction materials. The Empire State Building, I can go on and mention several other systems. Locally, yes, there are examples. Last time I mentioned most of the buildings in Gauteng. I want to mention buildings here in the Western Cape, some of them very, very close to you. A building that is completed this month, I'm told the McDonald's outside the parliamentary village in Acacia is built out of this particular first material that we have here. So when you do pass there, please knock it, feel it, and see how beautiful it looks. It is an alternative construction method. To answer the question, maintenance, what are the maintenance requirements of these alternative construction technologies? The second system, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, is a light steel frame structure. No, it's a light steel chromadec material on the outside, and inside it's polyurethane. This is predominantly the exact same way a motor vehicle is manufactured. It's a light steel chromadec on the outside, polyurethane in the inside. Sandwich panel. This particular system has been used to build two particular schools. One in Gauteng, in Mamelodi, Metsi Abapelo, and the second one, Nelson Mandela Primary School in Mthatha, which was handed over on the 18th last week of July 2013. What maintenance strategy was put in these particular schools? During the construction period, the contractor, together with the school governing body and the steering committee of the project, identified two people who worked with the construction team who were left over at the completion of the school to be maintenance personnel to manage the maintenance of the project going forward after the completion of the project. My proposal, therefore, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, is that during the construction or during the concept or the feasibility of the initial processes of the project funding, allow a provision for the maintenance of the structure or the infrastructure to be developed, which will be part of the project costs. This will ensure that the cost of the implementation includes maintenance as part and parcel of the project. Because the project is incomplete. If you finish it today, if you buy a Mercedes-Benz and you drive it on a rough road, it will get loosened. Some balls will become loose. Bits and pieces will get broken. And if you don't maintain it after 1 year or a couple of years, if you're driving in very rough areas, which are some where these schools are being built because they're subjected to young, energetic people who will knock and bump them, it's like a car being driven in a rough environment. You must put in place a maintenance strategy which will make sure that that infrastructure or that project will last as long as it is designed or built for. Therefore, it is my proposal that as part of the project funds, you allow for the maintenance as part and parcel of the capital project. So the maintenance strategy, yes, it's part and parcel of the project, but it must be put in place. If not put in place, the project will fail. These projects have been used overseas. They've been tested over time. Therefore, it is not true that they've not been tested in durability. Yes, they have been tested. They may not have been tested in KZN or in Eastern Cape, but they've been tested over time. I do not believe that South Africa is predominantly totally different. I understand that we have a much warmer climate than overseas in the north. But these structures have been tested over time on the earth and not in stratosphere. Therefore, it's my proposal that going forward, South Africa needs to come up with a selection process of the various strategies. The first structure that we have there is a light steel frame structure. What's the difference between that, this, and the other? That has a light steel frame structure with a polyurethane or a polystyrene core, clad with a magnesium oxide board. The second one, as I said, is a chromodeck with a polystyrene board. The third one is a light concrete clad with two boards on the outside. Therefore, going forward, to come up with a critical mass, we need, as South Africa, to select one mode so that we can develop a factory, because it would be very expensive to select a factory to build one particular model, to build one school. But if you had a critical mass, say, in Eastern Cape, and you selected either one, two, or three, or whatever model that you select, then it is possible to select to have a manufacturing capacity so that after the school is completed, that factory will still be there to provide maintenance kits should a panel be broken or a part of it be damaged. So therefore, I believe that maintenance is part and parcel of the project and must be allowed and catered for. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Akrima. Honorable members, are there any follow-ups? Deputy Minister.
Thank you for the opportunity. No, just to say, first of all, I think that this has been a very useful, I hope it's been a very useful session for the honorable members, but it's been a very useful session for us. If I could just quickly build a little bit on what the colleagues have said about alternative construction methods and building on the point about how do we build the capacity and create jobs in terms of production. I mean, for the moment, we're talking about schools. I mean, that's been the focus of the discussion. The Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission is also pushing into the space of clinics, new clinics. But obviously the big market and the big crisis in our country in terms of construction is in housing, particularly low-cost housing, and also in the sort of gap housing market as well. We know that there's a massive challenge in terms of affordability, in terms of ability to construct effectively, quickly, and so forth. So part of what, not speaking as DPW narrowly, but speaking from a government perspective, is that if we begin to show communities that there are good schools and good clinics, that we can also build a community acceptance for housing to be addressed through this method, then we will achieve the volumes which will enable us to really create a significant industry in this sector and therefore significant jobs, just to make that point. The other point is that it might have been useful if we had had this meeting jointly with the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education and the Department of Basic Education, because some of the questions can really only be answered by them, but also some of the lessons are not lessons that we need to draw from your questions. That lessons we need to learn from as DPW and also IDT. But I would add basic education, because if you look at page 6, which the DDG was referring to of the DPW input, and why there was confusion from members. The confusion wasn't yours. The confusion is in the way in which government is working. Actually, let's be honest about that. So DDE has identified 64 schools according to this thing. 30 have not come through DPW but have gone directly to IDT. Others have gone to other entities like KUCHA, for instance, if I understand correctly, and DBSA. And then another 30 are presumably, we're assuming, are coming to us in principle, but the memorandum has not yet been signed. Now, this is a very clumsy way of working, we need to admit as government. We're not sure quite, nor is IDT for its own purposes. I don't have a problem with IDT competing on the market, as it were, with its particular offering. But we need to be able to plan and what you refer to, the colleague from IDT referred to as the value chain, which was a polite way of saying the jumble that is often. So if DDS has identified 64 schools, that should have been done early on, and clarity about how we intend to approach it as government, not just narrowly as DPE, should be done early on. At the moment, the systems are all over the place. Now, the 30 schools that we think that we will get, and that the indication is that we will then hand them over to IDT, basically, for program management. So that you can see that the systems of government, in terms of the delivery of social infrastructure and school infrastructure in this case, are themselves that need reflection. And it's something that we need to reflect upon as government. What are the lessons we're learning from this? And from your questions, which are not muddled questions. The questions are reflecting muddle in the way in which government is working. For historic reasons, for good reasons. It's not as though someone is doing something nasty here. It's just institutionally there's a momentum in the institutions which we need to be reflect critically on. And that's exactly what the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, and specifically here SIP 13, which is the subheading of what we're looking at, is there to do. It's to say that we work not in silos as government, but that we work in a coordinated way. So I'd really like to thank the Chair and the Committee for convening this session. And maybe, if we'll run out of time as Parliament, this Parliament, but it would be useful almost to have a SIP 13 type joint meeting of affected department, line departments and portfolio committees, so that we can look at the school's construction thing in a coordinated way, and so that we learn lessons. Because that's the job of Parliament. The job of Parliament is to be critical of us, but to be critical, hopefully, with a view to assisting us to improve our work. And you certainly have. So, Chairperson, thank you for convening this particular session. I think it's forced us to, it's highlighted the challenges that we've got, which we've been aware of. It's just a pity that our colleagues from Basic Education, for instance, in particular, were not also present, to put it politely, to learn the lessons jointly with us. Maybe Treasury would also have been a useful partner to have here, and particularly the DBSA, which has been playing in this space as well. It's a bank, but it thinks it's a program manager. We've been pointing that out to it. But anyway, I'm straying out of the topic for the moment. But really to thank the colleagues and Chairperson, I think this has been an important, critical, these are the issues we need to be asking as Parliament around delivery, around government efficiency and lessons to be learned. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister, I just want to say in Mpumalanga and Limpopo, there are a lot of classrooms that have been built with a second method. In Limpopo, it was through Minister Mtswaledi. So we do have more than 200 of them. So people are gradually accepting them. Even now, as I'm talking in Mpumalanga, there's a construction that is taking place using the second method. So people are getting there. Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think we've come to the end of our meeting. The meeting is adjourned, and thank you very much for the presentations.